believe I've got another chapter in the It Could Only Happen to Me book. You ready for this?
The Only Happen to You book, yes.
As you know, the studio right next door has been vacant for quite a while here in the building.
Yes, and you told me about, by the way, that you rent in Philly a beautiful old studio space, and there's a gigantic studio space right next to you, right?
Yeah. In fact, I came this close to getting it because it wasn't that much more expensive. I just didn't, there was a lot of, like, partially, I just didn't want to move all this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
Looking around at your studio behind you. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you.
I've got this place crammed to the rafters with memorabilia and stuff. And also, you got to get the internet moved over, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. And I just started thinking about it and hyperventilating, and it was just like, I don't want it.
And also, you're like me. My wife and I have a rule that whenever we have IKEA furniture in our life, You get one move with IKEA furniture. Yep. You cannot move it more than once. If you try to move IKEA furniture twice, you're like, oh, well, it's broken now. Now it doesn't work anymore.
You're done, yeah. Yeah. And you're lucky if you get the one. Yeah, and this is all IKEA furniture. So it was just like, nah, I'm not going to do it. Well, I'm getting a new neighbor. I'm getting a new neighbor.
And I love this so much.
This could only happen to me if I had to have you guess, because the reason I say it could only happen to me, it's vaudevillian in its humor. It's vaudevillian. If you had to guess, what would be like the worst possible scenario if on a vaudeville sketch, somebody came up and said, hey, Joe, I heard you got a new neighbor. It's a blank. How would the other vaudevillian comic answer that question?
Well, by way of history, you've already had terrible, because about 3 or 4 years ago, I would call you and you would be like, oh, hold on, the sculptor next door is using his power tools. And I'd be like, what? Yeah. I'd just be like, in the background. Yeah. I was like, hammered away.
You'd hear everything next door.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I don't know, what would be worse? To me, it would be like clowns, like if Barnum and Bailey moved in.
All day long.
From next door, haka haka, all day long.
they're over there filling seltzer bottles and baking banana cream pie.
So who is it? What would you get? What'd you get?
Are you ready for this? It's a tap dancer. It's a tap dancer. They said, hey, Brad, we're going to do a sound check because I guess there's somebody above that's...
We're going to do a sound check? They already know they're in trouble if they're going to do a sound check.
Yes, and there's somebody renting upstairs that's an apartment, so it's residential, so they need to know how much of the sound is going to go up through the ceiling. And all of a sudden, this music just blares. Just all of a sudden, just a flood of music, and I hear... And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm sitting here, my eyes are crossed. I'm like, really? This is it? It could only happen to me. Now, I'm told, by the way, I haven't met the person. They're probably the nicest person in the world. I have I've got nothing against them. I'm told they're going to practice at night. And if that's the case, there's no skin off my nose at all. But
they're
gonna
practice
so
at
it's
night.
Like, I want to make this clear. I have no problem with the person. The funny part is that you could not have filled that blank in with a more vaudevillian answer than tap dance.
I mean, when you say tap dancers, here is honestly what I picture. Do you remember in the Muppet Show, around the second act of every show, they would do the sort of interstitial, like between acts, you know? And like 40 pairs of Muppets would come out and twirl dance. And then they would do one-liners. And so I'm imagining a room full of Muppets just tap dancing. You just got Scooter in the background, ta-ta-ta-ta, happy feet, boom, boom. I got those happy feet. I mean, what the hell are you? How are you going to live when there's this tap dancer next door?
Well, I hadn't put two and two together because I'm like, I call home to my wife and I say, who is it that could possibly make a living that they're a professional tap dancer and they're going to come in here and practice? When's the last time you hired a tap dancer? Yeah. And she says, oh, I got bad news for you. There's one way to make a living. You're a tap dance instructor. You're not going to have one tap dancer. You're going to have a dozen people going through the halls.
Oh, my God. And Brad, even worse, you're going to have one person keeping the beat and then a bunch of nine-year-olds going, clack-a-tick-clack-a-clack-a-clack-a-tack-a-tack-a-clack. And they're all going to be off and, oh, my God.
They're going to be doing T for two. T for two and two. for me.
Oh my
and
God.
I'll be over here pulling what remains of my hair out of my head.
Oh my God. Okay, class, we're going to do. And by the way, I'm now imagining it as who was the guy in the 70s that had the show that talked like this? We're going to have a wonderful
Lawrence
show.
Lawrence Welk.
Lawrence Welk. Welk. Now imagining
with
you've
his
got
lead
Lawrence
accordion player, Myron Florin. Just in case you need a Trivial Pursuit partner with his lead accordion, Myron Florin. But go ahead.
Oh my God. Reminding everyone that if you ever need someone for a bar quiz, Brad is the guy to go have a beer with because you will win that night with Myron as the answer. No, now I'm imagining it as like you're going to have somebody next to her. Okay, children, now we're going to do skidamarinka-dinka-doo. Here we go with the skidamarinka-dinka-doo. Skidamarinka-dinka-doo. Oh my God, Brad, tap dancers. This is literally my nightmare of who I would have as a neighbor. A tap dancer. Oh my. Honest to God. Why would you be so professionally able in tap dancing that you would have to rent a studio? This doesn't make sense. This doesn't line up. They're going to be making meth next door. That's what this is.
Well,
they told
them. If I'm lucky, because meth is nice and quiet.
Just a lot of bags being moved in and out constantly. But oh my God, Brad, a tap dancer. We're going to need updates as the weeks go on because
yes,
I need to know how this goes. And I need to know if you ever are able to scout out the person going in or out. Because what if it's somebody that just like their spouse is like, you're renting a space. You're going somewhere
out of here, Myron. You're leaving or I'm leaving you.
Myron, 3 years of a pandemic. You've been tap dancing at home. You're going to go rent a space. And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics, I'm Brad Geiger, the author of the Webcomics Handbook and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Tinkle Toes, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We have a super fun show with like five or six topics that you and I are champing at the bit to get to. But I want to remind everybody that you could be watching this show live right now over at LiveGab, over at patreon.com/comiclab. You can join at the $10 level and watch the live stream every week. And it is also archived for you. So in case you miss it for work, school, or life, you can check it out on the archives there. And Bradley, what is the first topic you want to jump into this week, my friend?
I'm coming in with a full head of steam on this one. I got to tell you something that happened to me last week.
Does it involve tap dancers? That's all I need to know.
it turns out that the answer to that question is and always will be for the foreseeable future. Yes. this is something that I had a really unique experience with, and I had to share it with you because it just got under my skin. So as you know, I started running a special seminar for not safe for work comics creators who are using Patreon. And this was done through Patreon's A Club, which is a series of different clubs that they organize for different groups of people. And I wanted to do one for comics creators. First of all, I got to tell you, this group of people that I've amassed for this thing, I cannot tell you what a rewarding, joyous, amazing experience it's been.
Oh, good.
And you could not find
a
group of more different people. And I'm talking about all over the spectrum, any spectrum you've got, very different, very different.
People, the way you sounded like an uncle there. I got to tell you, all the spectrums. We're looking at all the spectrums. Yeah. Any spectrum you can imagine, we got a spectrum.
I got a feeling like if you said, you know, like politically, where do you fall? We'd have all
you'd
across
the
whole.
Board. Yeah,
if
you, yeah. No, but this is great. I'm really glad to hear this, though. This is good.
In every case, you've got people who are encouraging, enthusiastic, people who are doing very different stuff, saying, hey, I've got some thoughts about what you're doing. And people saying, oh, I'd love to hear that. They've had critiques. I can't tell you the number of like just warm moments of these people sharing
encouragement and thought.
Yeah. And it's been joyous is the only word I've got for it. And so I saw that there was a new club being formed for not safe for work creators in general, just anybody doing not safe for work.
So through Patreon or is this elsewhere?
Yes. Okay. Another A club. And I thought I want to be in on that because seeing how these comics creators were all sharing vastly different backgrounds and all of the information sharing and all the stuff that I've learned. Let me tell you how serious this is, Dave. They've got me they've got me within this close of changing the charge up front, something I've had my heels dug in on for years. We've talked about it on the show. They've got me this close.
That's amazing that's, because I tried my best to get you to go to charge up front on Patreon and you were.
I had my heels dug right in.
You were dead set.
That's so, but I've seen such the power of sharing this information back and forth. And I thought how much cooler would that be if you had a whole bunch and
yeah, this you group want more had, of it, right? You dove in with one group and you're like, this is wonderful. I want more.
Not
of this.
Only that, but like you've got romance authors dealing in erotica. You've got cosplayers, you've got performers, you've got people, you know, either photography or shooting video. You've got people right across the board doing
you've
lots of different
things.
You've
got regional college professors with a ponytail in the back and bald up front that do some modeling occasionally.
Do a little bit of live drawing modeling. Yes. Right. Yes. Lloyd with the second L for love. Yeah, you got. And I thought with all those varied backgrounds. Right. How much could I learn from this?
Absolutely.
Group of people?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I found out the answer to that question. And the answer is not a whole damn lot. I got to tell you, they started out and it immediately, the conversation very quickly turned to the fact that Patreon does not allow not safe for work creators to show up in their search. You know, right. If you go to patreon.com, you put a search in. If you put my name in, you will not find my Patreon campaign because I'm not safe for work. Right. And they were convinced. They were absent. First of all, this meant that Patreon was bad. This meant that Patreon was against them and holding them down. It was the reason they were failing or not doing as well as they thought they could be doing. And there was no attempt to understand the why behind the what. There was no attempt to say, well, why is this happening? Which, by the way, I can kind of help you out there. It's one of the ways that Patreon is able to keep not safe for work creators is that they're able to fly under the radar. If they put that stuff up in the search, then all the religious groups, they become a target for that. Credit card companies that consider not safe for work to be high risk transactions, they become a target for that. Mm-hmm. They could Patreon could put not safe for work creators in the search tomorrow. They'd have to get rid of all not safe for work by next Thursday.
Right. So what I'm hearing you saying is Patreon is actually doing everyone a solid by keeping it on the DL so that they can fly underneath the radar of a lot of things that normally red flag credit card transactions, right? That
absolutely
makes total sense
right.
to me. But so but in this group, they're like, why won't the world let us be awesome is what they're saying, right?
Right. It was and bemoaning and this is the worst thing. And so I you know me, Dave. You know me. I could only stand so much of this. And also, through doing consultations and through doing this show, I know that there's two ways that I could try to make a point. One of which is to say, you're all dumb now. Listen to it. You know, listen to me. I'm going to tell you the right way to do things, which is why I want to say. But of course, if I say it that way, nobody listens because I'm being a jerk. Right.
Right.
So
right.
There's another way to say it. And I've got it so well practiced because I've done it a few times.
In the shower, I went over this 15 times. I was going to say this.
Yeah. Because I've done this talk where I say, hey, listen, I want to share with you my experience and how I have gone about this. And maybe there's something in it that you can find applicable to you. Right. And I said,
that sounds very reasonable.
You'd think. So I go, hey, listen, I've never lost a wink of sleep over not showing up in the search. And then I went into all the stuff I've talked about here a million times.
Well, the big one is you build your audience and you bring it to Patreon, right? That's the main one.
You don't build an audience on Patreon. You build it on social media and you bring it to Patreon funnel and the four C's and so on and so forth. I didn't get that far when the leader immediately shut me down and said that I was not honoring the truths of the other people in the room. I was not honoring their truth, David. And they did not want to hear about solutions. They didn't want to hear about strategies. They didn't want to hear about any of that stuff. They wanted to be victims. And I'm not talking about capital V victims, where there's actual victimhood out there, right? People who are being treated badly, people who are not by other people or by society in general.
Right,
there's
society has it out for them.
We're
yeah,
not
exactly.
talking about capital V victimhood. We're talking about the kind of victimhood where there's a website that has a setting that you don't appreciate. That's right, the kind of victimhood right. we're talking about right. here. And they wanted to have that victimhood validated in the worst way. And so it's like, okay, so what does that mean for Comic Lab? I want you to think about that. I want you to think about, because it's very easy to slide into that mindset. Because let's face it, victimhood is easy. It's easy to sit there and say, well, the world is against me, and so that's why I'm failing. It's hard to search for solutions. It's hard to say, oh, hey, this is not the most beneficial way. Now, knowing that, how am I going to make it work anyway? Right. We had that same conversation a couple of weeks ago where we talked about long form comics saying they say they have got it. It's more difficult to promote a long form comic on right. social media. Right. right. And I said, hey, if you look for excuses, you'll find excuses. If you look for solutions, you'll find solutions. Right.
Well, I mean,
which
yes,
are you
going to
spend
yes.
your time doing? You can say that's the case. But once you do that, you've got to start moving from that and looking for solutions. And it's the main thing I want to tell you today. For the love of God, if you're going to make it in this career, you've got to be able to shift from that first part where you say, hey, this is tough, to the part where you say, now, what am I going to do about it?
Yeah. And a part of it is at the most basic level, the optimism that with hard work and keeping your head on a swivel and research, those are kind of three pillars, you're going to be able to find some modicum of a workaround over pre-existing problems that are unsolvable. You know, in this case, the credit card transactions unsolvable for you as an individual, right? You're not going to fix that. So how do you work around it? How do you work within Patreon system? All that sort of stuff. And a part of it is, and I think we've tried to say this before on the show, is that it is not easy, quote unquote, to make a career online, whether you're a cartoonist, illustrator, painter, sculptor, whatever it is. It's not easy, because if it was, you would see all sorts of people leaving 40, 50, 60 hour a week jobs to do their Etsy or their website or their music or right. It is not easy, but it's the optimism of knowing that with research, with hard work, and with keeping your head on a swivel, that you'll find the workarounds, you'll find the solution. Like you said, if you're looking for solutions, you will find solutions. If you're looking for how the world is trying to actively keep you down, well, then you're going to think that the world is it's an unsolvable thing to that can't be overcome, you know?
And you're never going to get there, right? The other part of that thing is that the world does not owe you easy, right? You're not owed anything. You know, you're going to get whatever you go out there and earn or take or build or develop. It's up to you. It really is up to you. I get really upset every now and again when I see very creative people say, you know, get upset. And here's one. And by the way, I get it. When they say, when I post on social media, I feel like I'm screaming into the void. Yeah. I get that.
Oh my God, do I get that? Yeah.
And I honor your truth. when you say that out there, I get it. But the next sentence out of your mouth has got to be, so what? So here's what I'm going to do about it, right?
Right.
So I'm going to try something different. I'm going to try a different approaches. I'm going to look at what other people are doing, right? Because a lot of times you see some of those social media posts and you're like, nah, you're not shouting into the void. You're just not saying anything that's connecting yet.
Right.
You know, and you've got to get your mirror out and say, okay, why isn't this connecting? Why, is there another way I can do this? I get really upset because you see some very, very creative people. And it's something that you and I talk about all the time. If they put that creativity into use. And again, you know what I think about this. If you've got a creative mind, it is like a superpower. I know it makes you laugh every time. It's not an exaggeration.
It's my favorite thing you say. It's the greatest skill a human being could have. Brain surgeon? Nope. Astronaut? Nope. Cartoonist? Brad Geiger? Yes. That's the highest skill set you could have.
Yes. To take a blank page and to put something there where it wasn't there before? Yes, it's a superpower. And if you took that creativity and applied it to business problems or applied it to social media problems, applied it to any number of those other things, you will find that it is a superpower.
No, you're right. You're right. It's so much of this is a mindset thing, and it's hard to shake ourselves, all of us, myself included, longstanding habits. But the idea, I always liked the idea, I gravitated towards it, that regardless of what external events are going on in your life, that you are the omnipotent narrator of your life.
Yeah.
And so you can make your own magic in your life as much as you are capable of doing it. And are there limits? Yes. Are there roadblocks? Absolutely. Will life absolutely kick you in the teeth at times? Oh, my God, yes. And in a lot of ways, we're currently in a very tricky time to build a career with social media, because I feel like we're in a liminal state between what we were at with Twitter, say, 10 years ago and Instagram 10 years ago, if they were around, maybe 8 years ago, and where we're going to be, I think, in about 5 to 10 years from now. And we're in this stage where I think algorithms are unforgiving in a lot of respects. The video is being pushed increasingly. It's hard to get people out of walled gardens. There is no argument that this is a very tricky time to be a cartoonist sharing content and trying to make a living from it. No argument. But one of the things we do on this show is try to say, okay, accepting that Instagram is a bugbear, or accepting that Twitter is getting increasingly hard to find growth, or accepting that websites, it's hard to get people to go to a website anymore, and that RSS doesn't really work anymore. How can we do it given all those things? And without saying woe is me, but trying to say, what can I do to work around this? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And to take it on that is your responsibility as a creator, right? In other words, we're going to show up here. We're going to do the rest of the show today. We're going to show up here next Tuesday. We're going to show up the Tuesday after that. We're going to give you lots of thoughts. We're going to give you lots of suggestions, advice. This is working. This isn't working. But at the end of the day, it's your responsibility as a creator to find which one of these things works for you, or whether it's something that we haven't even said yet.
And it's tricky that because in the arts, the world doesn't owe you a career in the arts. Life doesn't owe you a career. So you got to fight for it. It's not a 1 or 2 or 3 year process. You got to fight for it over multiple years. And that's why I always say you got to make your own magic, because nobody else can want your career for you. You've got to wake up in the morning and go like, all right, I've got my day job, but weekends, vacations, summers, I'm going to do whatever I can to get there. And it's an active fight. It's an active thing you've got to be working on.
So now that I've got my rant over and I'm feeling at peace with the world once again, I think we should take a question from a Patreon backer, and I've got a great one for you. And we're gonna go all positive now. It's about books to learn by. This is from one of our new Comic Lab backers named Cosmo, who says, hey, Comic Lab, enjoy the show every week and look forward to the content. I'm very new to comics, and I wanted to know what books you guys recommend for a new comic artist to learn from, or even to use as reference. I enjoy the style of Marvel, but I've always gone through the majority of their books.
Okay, this is a fun question, because they're asking not only for the how-to books, but also sort of the best of the best in terms of visuals, storytelling, panel design, character work, like, all that sort
inspiration.
Of stuff,
right? Where can I look for inspiration?
Oh gosh, this is fun. All right, well, I would start off with I always liked, I think it was McLeod's second or third book, Brad. Which one's that? What's the one?
I think it was Creating Comics.
Creating Comics, thank you.
Those two-word titles.
Yeah, Grandpa had a moment there. Yes, Creating Comics. I always thought he did a really excellent job with that one in terms of the nuts and bolts of making comics. Yeah. And I, as far as the basics, the sort of eternal basics, the DC and Marvel books, there's really some good kernels, I think, in those ones. Yeah. Those are the ones like How to Make Comics the Marvel Way.
Right.
I don't remember what it's like, DC's Guide to Lettering, DC's Guide to Inking, DC's Guide to Penciling, that kind of stuff. Those, I think, are really good basics in terms of the nuts and bolts of comics. How about you for the nuts and bolts? What else
for
would you
nuts
recommend?
Nuts and bolts, again, that original classic How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way by Stan Lee and John Buscema. You could not read that one enough times, because every time, as far as I'm concerned, you're going to find something new.
And just a reminder, well, if you can, go to YouTube and check out the video that accompanies the book of Stan Lee and just an absolutely schwitzing John who does not want to be on camera. Well, Stan, I'll tell you how we do. Cheers, girl. Okay, fantastic, John. Oh, this is great. Is this how? And we hold the pencil this way, John. Stan, who's never drawn a day in his life. And we hold the pencil this way. Is that right? Fantastic. Okay, great.
Yeah, and John, just not a show person. John was a sweet guy, but did not like it in front of the camera.
I can't believe they couldn't find somebody in the bullpen that wasn't a little more telegenic than John, poor guy.
But they couldn't have found a better artist. I mean,
I know.
God, I still look at those illustrations and drool. But so, yeah, I'd say reread How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. Of course, the new book that Nate Picos came out with on one of the most important parts of comics, it's called The Essential Guide to Comic Book Lettering.
Oh, yeah, it's very good.
You want that in your library, and you want to actually read it. A lot of times people buy a book like this and then set it on their shelf because they want to get the information by osmosis. Yeah. This is a thick book. There's a lot of pages there. You're going to be busy for a couple months understanding everything he's got to say there.
Right.
But you really need to understand. Lettering is one of the most important parts of comics. And it's really something you need to focus on.
And you may have noticed that at this point, Brad and I have not mentioned our own book that we wrote with Scott Kurtz and Chris Straub, How to Make Web Comics. And I think partially it's because a lot of it, Brad, I think, is kind of dated out already. I don't remember what there are, but let's say there's 10 or 12 chapters. I think half of them are probably still very applicable in terms of how to approach a career online. And then the other half, remember, we wrote that book, Brad, before social media was invented.
Yes. Twitter was not around. Facebook was not around.
Instagram was not around.
Yep. Is super dated.
One from a library. Don't buy that. It already went through its four printings. There's enough of them out there, but don't.
I'm not even going to pitch my book, which is the Webcomics Handbook, because really it's a business book. It's about building your business, building social media. And that's not the topic here.
Right.
So it's. Yeah, I'm gonna mention it at the top of the show.
I'm gonna mention it, but I'm
gonna mention it every chance I get.
I'm gonna mention where you can purchase it on my website, but I'm
that's
not gonna.
Right. That's right. Get it at Amazon. Put my name in; it'll come up there. But I'm gonna also put a little nod in for this one. You gotta really search for this. It's called The Complete Book of Cartooning.
It's by John
Adkins Richardson, and I think it dates back to the 70s. Speaking of things that are a little bit dated, but unlike, 1977, Prentice Hall, this remains, in my opinion, one of the best catch-all how-to books on cartooning and comics, even to the point of having a very good dissertation and an explanation of how four-color printing works. You're breaking down into cyan, magenta, yellow, and black.
Yeah.
Such a good, and it covers everything from comic books to comic strips to single panels, even greeting cards, writing, drawing tools. It is such a good book. If you can still find it, you'll have to dig for it. If you can still find it, I recommend it strongly.
I'm going to be honest here. In a very egotistical moment, I thought that I knew every book about how to make comics and comic making and comic as a career. I have literally never seen nor heard of that book that you just held up. Yeah. And that's blowing my mind. I'm actively going to go find that on eBay and buy that because I've never heard
sure
of that book
before. I'm
sure you
can still find a copy. But it was one of the early ones my parents got me when I was a little kid. I got it around 1977, 1978.
Right.
I was a young kid at that point, and I tore through it and have read it cover to cover many times.
Well, while we're throwing out oldies but goodies, again, this is a book that you need to ignore 50% of, but Lee Nordling, N-O-R-D-L-I-N-G, had a book called Your Career in the Comics, which if I had to guess was probably published mid-80s. I don't have it in front of me. Again, like Brad said, it's going to be a hard one to find. It's long out of print. You can probably find it on eBay, but maybe your library has it. It's one of those ones where Lee Nordling interviewed all the big comic strip cartoonists of the time. And so you can absolutely throw out every bit of information or advice about getting into a syndicate or working with a syndicate because who cares anymore?
Yeah,
but the stuff that is valuable in there is the mindset of producing a comic strip. How Kathy Geiss-White or Mort Walker or Schultz They'll tell you how they approach cartooning and creating and writing and drawing every day. All of that stuff is really helpful from a creativity standpoint. Yeah. So throw out all the business stuff in that book, but maybe hold on to the creativity and cartooning stuff in that book.
Yeah. And then, I mean, listen, there's lots of books on you know, sequential art and drawing and laying out comics. And listen, you can take your pick, and they're all going to cover that topic very well.
Right.
I would want you as well to start picking up some books on writing, right? I'd want you to start really think about the writing part, because the fact of the matter is that if you come to this and this person says, I'm an artist, right? If you're coming to this from the standpoint of an artist, chances are these sequential art problems that you're solving, you're going to solve them very naturally because you're an artist. But the writing is so much more important in almost every form of comics. The writing really is what's going to make you or break you. Okay. You can, we always say, great writing saves bad art. It rarely works the other way around. In fact, I think it's one of the 20 comics commandments, right?
That's right. That's right.
You've got to understand writing, and there's a lot of books out there that can help you out with that. Any one of the books of that talk about the hero's journey is a good one just to get that kind of concept into your brain. Also, I'm a big fan of Save the Cat, which was a book on screenwriting that has excellent advice on setting up narrative and so forth. I'd want you to go out and pick up a couple of books on writing in general, but screenwriting and that kind of writing, from my experience, tends to have a much better crossover into what we do, especially like TV screenwriting, because what we do tends to feel episodic. That's my best guess for you.
Yeah.
Is to look at those kind of things and to learn. Even if you're like an artist and you're like, well, I'm going to collaborate with a writer, that's great. And more power to you, but you still have to understand narrative. You still you have to be able to produce that through your lines, through your images. You still have to understand the shot. You have to understand what that writer's going for in that moment.
Right.
And part of that means learning narrative.
And I would also, just other ones I could throw out on writing. Stephen King has an interesting one on writing. Twain has some good thoughts about writing and approaches of writing. I will say though too, it is worth developing a life where you read voraciously, voluminously, and widely. Yeah. Because all sorts of stuff that you can pick up from reading Jane Eyre and from reading Tolstoy, you know, or reading John Byrne's run on X-Men, or that's why I say read widely, because it's you'll pick up all sorts of little tips and tricks from Frank Herbert and from Dr. Seuss. You know, you'll get ideas on how to. It's not the same thing as writing, in the same way that listening to music is not the same thing as practicing guitar, but it helps tune your ear to what good writing is.
And as important as it is to read good writing, I'm going to throw in, read some bad writing.
Yeah, read some Sheldon.
Really crappy. I'm telling
just
you.
Just kidding.
I've read some stuff where, especially, just looking for something to read. Sometimes you happen upon something that's an amateur level writing, and you learn so much about good writing by hearing writing done bad.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And being taken out of the moment and saying, oh, that sentence completely threw me. And then you're like, oh, that's what happens when I write a bad sentence. I take my reader out of the moment. I'm as much as I'm a cheerleader for reading the greats, I also wanted to have you read some real crappy stuff. You'll learn volumes in doing that.
Yeah. And honestly, this is your public library can be your friend too, in terms of finding books. Will Eisner also has a couple of books that I never really sparked with Eisner in a way that maybe other people did. I don't know what is wrong with me that I didn't, but it's perfectly good. And he's an amazing drafts person. And his work is beyond par with anything that I could do. But for whatever reason, I never caught in with those. And then I would say, too, that if we could switch gears for a minute, I would highly recommend reading The greats. I would read McKay with Little Nemo, and I would read mm-hmm. Crazy Cat. Yeah. Some of those older comics that are really stand the test of time. Pogo, probably, Brad, even though yeah. we would probably not say don't learn a dang thing from the lettering. But
yeah, read Pogo from like the from three quarters down. Of the from three quarters of the panel down. Don't get any dumb ideas from the typography. Don't do that. But everything from three quarters down yeah. that. Yeah. The line work, you can learn about line work, environments, backgrounds. You could learn oodles from Pogo. Just don't get any bright ideas about the lettering.
Yeah. And I honestly, it probably is so recent that you've forgotten about it, but Watterson is a masterclass on panel construction, on flow, on energy, on line weight, on character movement. He's very, very good. So good that it surprises you because you realize with how few strokes he achieved certain things.
Yeah.
For me, the same thing is true with David Lowe, who is an Australian cartoonist that worked in Britain in World War II. I know I bring him up every once in a while, but just an incredible economy of line with a brush stroke. And if you can look up David Lowe, L-O-W, fantastic line work that you can learn from. Who else, Brad, on your end, would you recommend reading for work produced, not as a how-to?
For work produced, I'm going to throw Burke Breathitt in there just because it's also a good reminder about making your stuff, making a choice with your subject matter. Right?
Yeah.
Burke Breathitt during the 80s owned the 80s.
Oh my God, did he own the 80s? Yeah.
His subject matter was so rooted in current events that if you try to read his stuff now, it's a little bit opaque. Right. Because it was so rooted in current events.
I'll go farther, Brad. It's opaque to us as people who read it the first time around. It's super opaque to someone in their 20s. They're like, who's Casper Weinberger? I don't know who this is. I don't know. I don't get this joke at all.
What's the big deal about Tip O'Neill? You know,
exactly.
And meanwhile, like my kids and you go to any grade school today and you'll see a kid carting around a Calvin and Hobbes.
Right.
And our question asker, Dave, is a comic. It sounds like they're like a comic book person.
Right.
What can you learn as a like if you're doing a superhero comic? What can you learn from Calvin and Hobbes? Volumes.
Oh, volumes.
Volumes.
Yeah.
Just because the drawing style is different doesn't mean that you can't learn and extrapolate what Watterson is doing to something that's more of a traditional graphic novel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would have underlined Little Nemo just for understanding line weight and the power of line. I wouldn't even read Little Nemo. I would just pour through the panels.
Yeah.
You don't have to follow the storyline at all. Just look at how those are constructed. And of course, I think to wrap up our list, Ziggy, you have to understand the cultural importance of Ziggy. In fact, Dave, you were just telling me you came upon a Ziggy in the newspaper just the other day. And you said, this may be the best newspaper Ziggy I've ever read. Remember that you were telling me?
I love that you transitioned us to Ziggy because I was not expecting this. And Bradley, I got to tell you, my favorite Ziggy punchline is since you're throwing this at me is when Ziggy, I think you remember this one. It's up on my wall where he says, I love to think back over my past, Bradley, but I'll be honest, there's no future in it. I'm Ziggy.
You're going to learn a lot from Ziggy.
But I will say, I'll throw out a couple more. Watchmen is incredible for what you can do with a standardized layout in myriad ways in terms of, someone did the math on how many possibilities are with the gridded Watchmen layout.
Yes.
And it's a surprisingly. What's what?
27.
No, it's higher than 27. God damn you. God damn you. I love it. You threw me under the bus of that one. It's four. There's four different possibilities. But Watchmen is amazing. I also love Watchmen because even though I personally use found objects in Drive as a storytelling, I really dislike the Black Pirate story, whatever, or the Black Flag story, whatever that pirate story is in the middle of. To me, it doesn't work at all. And so it's fascinating how it's like a big swing. I love that they did it, but for me, it doesn't work at all. Anyway, I would also say Bone is amazing because you see Jeff Smith getting better as a cartoonist as he's doing Bone. Because remember, it took him years to do it. So you see his line work, you see his storytelling. You see his backgrounds all improving as he's doing Bone, so that's a fun one to read. Any other last ones, Brad, that you would pitch on?
Oh gosh, I will Well, listen, I always go back to, again, the greats, John Buscema for comic book art and composition. And you can take your pick. I loved his run on the Avengers, but also his stuff on Conan was amazing.
I'm sorry, what was that book?
Conan the Barbarian.
I'm so used to hearing Conan O'Brien that he pronounces it Conan. So that when you said Conan, it sounded like Conan. I like to read Conan the Barbarian.
And John Byrne, who you already mentioned.
Yes, the first 10 to 12 books of Alpha Flight are among the best in terms of flow and line art. It's great. Yeah.
And the recently deceased Neil Adams and his Batman stuff. There was, if you go back into when he was really hitting it hard in like the 70s and 80s, you can learn a lot about graphic storytelling just by poring over those pages.
Well, I got to say, as a mid-show update, because Brad had mentioned Ziggy, I have to tell you that I actually found this book the other day, Brad, and I wanted to share it with the show because I'm not going to buy it because it was out of print and it was like $50. And I'm like, I'm not spending $50 on this joke. But there is a book called Ziggy-isms, Notable Quotes of Wisdom for Everyday Living. And it's all collected Ziggy quotes.
And now, wait a minute. Are there cartoons or just words?
I have no idea. There's no. Look inside this book in terms of Amazon because it's way out of print. But the fact it's called Ziggyisms, Notable Quotes of Wisdom for Everyday Living. And I was like, surely it's going to have Brad's favorite Ziggy comic of all time in it. That I'm sure you remember, Brad, your favorite Ziggyism from, I believe it was from 1978, was it not?
Yes. I, as a matter of fact, Dave, I got to tell you, I took the old favorite that I used to have.
I put a new one
on there, and this is my new favorite. And it goes like this: sometimes in life you come up short. Unfortunately, I'm 3'6". I'm Ziggy.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. All right, Brad, well, I've got a mid-show update for everyone that might be going to San Diego Comic-Con in a few weeks' time. San Diego Comic-Con. I don't know if you guys remember conventions.
San Diego Comic Book Convention.
The San Diego Comic Book Convention. Fantastic. Lovely to see all of you here at the Comic Book Convention. So
one of the things, I will be at booth 1228. And this year, as a special treat for all the Comic Lab listeners, if you come up to the booth at 1228 and express your love for the show, I have got a free Comic Lab pin for you that says let's talk comics, and it's really cute. We came out great. They just arrived last night, which is why I mentioned. I haven't even showed you the picture yet, Brad. I should text you.
You have one with you to hold up to the live stream?
I do not. This is how prepared I am for the show, Brad. Go ahead, ask me what else I haven't done for the show today. This is great. It's a miracle that I'm here, Brad. That's what I'm saying. But anyway, this is the first time that
it's just theoretically gorgeous.
Yeah. It's like a Schrodinger's cat. You know what I mean? If I had it in here, you wouldn't be able to see it. So anyway, what I want to tell you, though, this is the first time I've ever done a giveaway. If come up to the booth, say hi. It's nice to meet you. It's kind of my way of saying after the end of 3 years of pandemic that I want to see your faces and give you a high five. So come by the booth, 1228. I've got a free Comic Lab pin for you. That is my first big update. And I think actually my only big update for the show now that I mention it. So, Brad, let me jump into our next question coming in over at patreon.com/comiclab. This question comes in from Michael, and Michael writes, "Hey guys, I wanted to know what your thoughts are on the pros and cons of a long form comic being released one panel a day. Is it better to wait and release groups of panels over a longer period of time or one panel a day? I'm not trying to, I'm not like a prosecutor trying to lead on the questioning there, Matt, but one panel a day.
Okay, well, listen, let's talk about the pros and cons. First, the pros. And now the cons. There are no pros. There are no pros. I cannot discourage you from this idea strongly enough. I can't imagine this ever working well. First of all, it's a long form comic.
Yep.
So what could, you've got two choices for what that one panel is going to be. It's either going to be the standard one panel in a long form comic. For example, Joe comes into the room and says, "Good morning, everybody. I brought donuts." Well, if that's it, that's your panel. That's going to be what you post. That's your panel. That's, there's nothing there. Right. Or it's going to be, and you see people do this, you see people still trying to pull this off. It's one illustration, which is maybe kind of a so-so illustration with 10 or 11 word balloons all dotted all around. And there's word balloon tails zigzagging back and forth. It's a freaking maze that you've got to try to follow to see who's saying what, when, and to whom. Again, you get more than three word balloons in a panel and you better be really watching your P's and Q's. Is it that going to be that kind of panel? Right. And number three, I don't know how many cons I'm up to yet. I'm going to lose count, but stop and think about your audience just for a second. Remember what we tell you, your audience is sitting through a steady cavalcade of content. I meant to look this up. Somebody in the live chat, help me up. This number has to exist. How many pieces of content is the average social media viewer exposed to in a day?
Oh,
it's got to be a huge number. How many videos?
Four.
How many? You son of a gun!
I did it back to you.
You did it right back. No, but it's got to be a large number of videos, a large number of images, a large number of text messages. How many? That has to exist somewhere out there.
Yeah.
But let's just assume it's a large number.
Right.
And among all those things, they saw your one panel. Now you come back the next day. Now the algorithm is going to kind of make it so that they're probably not going to see that next panel. They're going to probably see the third one or the fourth one after that.
Right.
You're expecting them to eat, but let's say that you're magic. Like you found the magic hashtag and you're going to make sure that your panel gets in front of that reader over and over and over again through your magic hashtag. Even with that, you expect them to memorize yesterday's panel so that they can understand today's panel. What you actually have here is a microcosm of the mistake that a lot of comics artists make on social media. And it's a microcosm. You're not giving a big enough story swing to matter. We always talk about on this show, frequent, consistent, significant.
Yep.
That third one's important, significant. It's got to be a significant update. So instead of trying to do one panel at a time, which I cannot get my head around, I would encourage you to do story swings that are frequent, consistent, significant. Give them enough in that moment. Thank God you got them there. You got their attention. You slowed the scroll. Now give them enough so that they have a reason to find your website. They have a reason to follow you on social media. Give them a reason to do something. This one panel is never, I can't see how it could possibly pull that off. What do you think, Dave? One panel a day. It's a great way to make sure that you can post an awful lot of stuff into the years, right?
Brad, you're in Paris and you're walking around Paris and you see a little bread shop and ding-a-ling-a-ling, you walk into the shop and you're like, with your best French, Brad, you go, "Un croissant, s'il vous plaît," right? Oh, and and they go, "Of course, sir, we will get you the croissant." But then with a tiny little knife and a tiny little fork, they give you one little bite and they say, "In 15 minutes, you'll get their next bite."
Yeah,
you know, and then they come back with a knife. I don't know why I said this in France. It didn't need to be in France. But like, it would be, it's annoying. It's not satisfactory. And it frankly makes you want to walk away, which is all the things that your readers would feel if they only got one panel a day. They would be annoyed. It would be unsatisfying and they would walk away. Because frequent, consistent, substantive, those three kind of have to work together.
Yeah.
to make a reader not only stop to read, but enjoy the read and then want to come back to read. And when it's only one panel a day, it's like serving someone individual strands of spaghetti instead of giving them a meal. You know, you're like, why would you do it this way? The way you're describing it is you were doing one panel a day. And so over 7 days, you would have a full page. Release that one day a week, release a page. Then it's frequent, it's consistent, and it's substantive, you know, and each could have a big pow ending of some, whether it's emotional, whether it's humor, whether it's action in the comic, fill in the blank with what substantive is for you there. But frequent, consistent, substantive, that could work over a 7 day period.
Yeah. And also remember this, in the early days of webcomics, we had to put something out every day. We had to do it daily because it was ad driven. That's the whole reason. We told people it was free. That was marketing. It was ad driven. All right. That's throwing over all the cards. So it was ad driven. You don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to do that. You can, if you've only got enough content that you can do a significant update once a week, then you do that once a week update and let that stand. It's a completely different publishing landscape than we had 15 years ago.
Right.
The most important thing is that once you happen to slow that reader's scroll and you got their attention, now you got to do something about it. You got to do something. You got to make your magic while you've got that moment. And I do not see how you're going to do that with a single panel. Again, even if it was like, I'm trying to give this person the benefit of the doubt, where it's like a series of single panel comics with a punchline that somehow form a narrative.
Right.
I don't see how that's going to work.
I mean, might this be the Ziggy writer writing in, Brad, saying describing for us Ziggy and like, could this work, guys? No, but I mean, like Brad, I want to give the benefit of the doubt because we want to always, as much as we were kind of stinkers at first with this question, we do want to encourage for all of us, ourselves included, a certain level of experimentation of could this work?
Yeah.
Hey, could comics be done this way? Because frankly, had you asked a cartoonist 30 years ago, hey, could you do it vertically and do it in an infinite vertical?
Yeah.
They'd be like, what are you talking about? Go away, kid. You know, so you see that how much the landscape has changed for comics. So yes, we should experiment. But sometimes when you give infinite monkeys infinite typewriters, you're like, all right, that idea doesn't quite work. But I appreciate the experimentation and the ideation behind it.
Yeah.
But a single panel at a time, I feel like just it's frequent, yes. It's consistent, yes, but it's not substantive in any satisfying way.
You're going to have a hard time making it significant. It's just it's going to be an uphill battle. And the other thing is, why? Why are you doing this, right?
Why?
When you don't have that limitation, right? You can easily do 4 panels in a social media update. You can do 6 panels in a social media update. You can do a lot of things. Why? It almost feels like you've got the shackles on. You've got you've got your hands tied behind your back. And it's like, no, what you should be doing, especially if you're doing a long form comic, is putting that thing out in story swings. I've been using that phrase a lot, story swings, because I don't want to, sometimes our go-to is to release like a page a day.
Right,
and unless you're writing that page so that it ends on a significant moment, a page a day might not be the best thing for you. Maybe for you, 2 pages, or not 2 pages a day, but 2 pages per update. Maybe it's a half page per update, like I do for Evil Inc., right?
Yeah.
It's whatever story swing is going to be significant.
Well, and it's funny you said shackles because there's an element of this that reminds me of why we sometimes critique wordless comics.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, yes, you could put these shackles on yourself, but why would you do it? It feels unsatisfying in the same way that I think wordless comics feel unsatisfying because comics are... for the most part, this wonderful marriage of words and pictures, and for the most part, sequentiality. So when you take sequentiality out of it, you know, which is kind of what you're doing here, it's like, well, what is this then? It's a snapshot. It's not a comic. You know, it's a moment in time. It's not a comic.
Yeah. I think that's important. I think that really is important. So, Dave, let's go to another question here. And this is a really good one because, this comes to the beating heart of what it means to be in a creative community. Okay. I feel this one. It comes in from our friend Darth Mander, who says, any advice on critiquing when I myself am still a beginner? Say, for example, in something like the critique channel in the Comic Lab Discord server.
Right.
Okay. We've got a special channel where you can post things for critique.
Right.
I want to be able to give feedback and be a contributing part of the community, not just someone always asking for help. Do right. I try my best and hope I don't give terribly bad advice? Do I let those with more experience answer until I've learned more and feel more comfortable? I love the podcast. Just a blast to listen to. It manages to be helpful, hilarious, and heartwarming at all at the same time. So let's see if we can be heartwarming on this one, Dave. How do you give advice when you yourself are just a beginner?
Have you ever noticed that in life, Brad, that the people that ask a question that's like, hey, I'm really trying not to be a jerk I don't want to do X, Y, Z. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a parenting question, a student question. I always find that the people that ask the question are the last people that would ever actually be the jerk because they're being conscientious about it.
Yes.
You know, they have the concern. They clearly have the concern. So I really appreciate the conscientiousness of saying, I want to be a part of the community, but I don't necessarily want to step on toes or I don't want to over. And to that kind of person, that personality, I want to reassure you that the odds are you're probably not going to because you already are coming at this from a conscientious angle. So let's jump in on this question. In terms of offering up critiques, that Discord server on the Patreon Discord server for Comic Lab is a very specific thing because it's people soliciting feedback, opinions, critiques of their work. In general, as a non-professional, I wouldn't do it unsolicited on social media like Brad posts something like, Brad, here's 15 things you did wrong with this. I've got some ideas, you know, that kind of thing. We've talked about in the past how unsolicited critiques are. And it's just an odd way to go through life. It's not necessarily welcomed by the artist. It's not necessarily helpful to the process. It's more of an egotistical swing. So I wouldn't do that. But in that specific Discord server, people are soliciting for critiques. And here's where I think you could come at it. You could say, listen, hey, I'm not a trained artist. Like you could have a sort of caveat of like, I'm not a trained artist. I'm not yet put in my 10,000 hours on cartooning. But as a reader, since you're asking, I did notice this, this, and this. Or as a lover of comics, I would say blank, blank, blank. Or I find that in my own reading experience, I like blank, blank, blank. That kind of critique, I think, is actually very valid because even though your artistic ability, your writing ability is not yet to where you want it to be, I think your editorial eye as a reader is probably more advanced than you think it is. And so I think that's a very valid critique and criticism. Yeah. Well, not necessarily criticism, but a vantage point to come at. What do you think, Brad?
I like that idea. I will say this. If you're a beginner, if you're just starting out and until you've been doing comics for a while, my advice is to lay back on participating in critiques in general until you've got more experience under your belt. And I do think you can say, if you kind of frame it right and say, well, this is how I look at it as a reader. I would say lay back on that a little bit because I think there is, I've seen a few times where like somebody just gets the Nate Picos book and they've read a couple chapters and now they've got all these thoughts on lettering. And until you actually put that into practical use, you don't understand that you could be getting into some misunderstandings that of nuance that you don't understand. Having said that, I want to throw this thought at you. Let's say that you say, okay, I'm going to lay back on the critiques. How do I participate in this community? Well, there's a lot of ways to participate in a community that have nothing to do with critiques. You can be encouraging. You can have thoughts. You can ask questions. You can participate in larger discussions.
Share resources. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Share resources. There's lots. You don't have to participating in a critique is a very small percentage of being a member of a creative community like the one that we're building on the Comic Lab Discord server. It's a small percentage. You could go through a long time and lay back on that, and it would never affect your ability to be a full standing member of that community because there's so many other ways that you can make a positive contribution.
Just building on that, I will say that I've been a cartoonist for I don't know how many years. Sheldon's been going about 25 years now, right? And I will be honest that I like to think of myself as a full-standing member of the cartoonist community. I don't do critiques, even when people actively solicit from me, like, hey, Dave, I'd really love to get your thoughts on that. I'm like, it's just not my personality. I don't like telling other people what to do with their work. Ugh, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But you barely crack a door, and Brad will run through that door to give you a critique. We're just different per people. We're put together differently.
And I've got thoughts and you need to hear them.
Yeah, but what I'm saying at is I don't say that as a shot at Brad. It's a super valid way to go through life. He's got decades of experience. You absolutely should listen to Brad. I'm just saying that both Brad and I are valid members of the community. One of us does enjoy critiques. The other one doesn't. You can still walk this walk without ever having to offer criticism, critique, thoughts, commentaries on other people's art. You can walk your own path in your career and share resources, tips, friendliness, all that sort of stuff, and never have to critique someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And remember, the best way you can be a part of a community is to be joyous, to be positive, to be happy, to be somebody that's fun to be around.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Because there's literally so many ways that our art can be take shots at you and knock you down. And so, God forbid, if the worst thing that you bring is joy and kindness and friendliness to a community, my God, you're already making it better just by that simple act. So, yes, I will co-sign that.
And I got to tell you, I'll just say you specifically, Dave, you're somebody that I enjoy being with because you're that kind of person. You're positive, you're joyous, and it makes me happy that I'm in this community with you. And it makes me happy that we're going to be back here next week doing this same podcast all over again, because we've reached the end of this one where I get to say you've been listening to a podcast called Comic Lab. I got so excited about that I tripped. Oh my God. I was so excited about that transition and I just boffed it.
Matt, I'm speaking to you as an editor and as a friend. Cut nothing from that. That was so perfect. And that's why you've been listening to podcast. Hold on, let me get another running start at that. Because, by the way, you were so proud of yourself for the transition that you were like, I got this. I'm running right ahead. I'm headed to steam here. You've been listening to podcast. I've been Geiger, Brad. Thanks for coming.
I was so proud of myself. I had such a winning streak. Anyway, you've been listening to us, and we do a show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Ziggy, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my friend, the positive, valuable, sociable, joyous Dave Kellett, the co-directory of the... the co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and the newly redesigned website of Drive. Go and check it out. It's gorgeous at drivecomic.com.
And channeling Brad, I can just tell you that theme song, permission, Andy Creighton for podcast. He's over at the worldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, where we're getting an amazing amount of 5-star reviews.
We are growing on Spotify. Isn't that weird? I don't know what we did right, but it is growing on Spotify lately.
I love it. And thank you if you're over there on Spotify giving us a 5-star review. It's beautiful to see how people have been supporting.
Yes, it does make a difference. Unlike Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, it does seem to help with the reviews. So please, if you're on Spotify, take a hot second. It does help.
And you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab. So how's everything going over at the studio there?
Oh, listen, things are going great. The thing about it is that, you know, on the other side of the studio, we've got the tap dancer on one side. I didn't tell you who's coming in on the other side. It's a telegraph operator. So I'm
And then on the roof, unfortunately, there's that family of woodpeckers that just moved in. Did they not?
That's right. The ones that just had the metal implants for their beaks. It's a woodpecker rescue. They take woodpeckers with broken beaks and give them nice metal beaks. Nice metal. They can use.
No one has enjoyed a badly beating two spoons together than Brad Geiger.